And welcome in to DVD on this Friday afternoon. I guess it's still technically Friday morning, but you're well on your way to your weekend. You are well on your way if you're out there listening. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. Adam Vingan soaking up the last few rays. You know, he chipped in. He had a couple of texts. You know, hey, you might want to try this for your show. I've been listening or been reading this. So contributing from the road, he said he was on a splash pad as we speak. But he still chimed in.
Adam, just vacation, man. That's all you need to do. Just vacation. You know, take advantage of it while you can. Work will be here. We're not going anywhere. I know you want to be a part of what's going on. I understand it. I get it. I love it. But Adam.
He's dedicated.
Yeah. We'll see you Monday, Adam.
We will see you Monday, Adam. By the way, I like bringing in like these rags that cleans my computer, camera, cleans my phone, and it's like one of these, what do they call them, mesh rags. I don't know what they, I forgot the name for it, but it's one of those rags that cleans glass good. So I've been smelling something.
Yeah.
And it smells nice. Good. Yeah, it smells good.
It's unusual for our studio
exactly.
to smell good.
And I walked in and I said, I'm like, that's a delightful smell.
It
I'm
is
like,
delightful.
Where's that smell coming from?
It is delightful.
And lo and unbeknownst to me, I grabbed the rag that I usually like dab some car stuff on so it smells good.
Yeah.
Because the rag holds it and I put it in a cup holder, it heats up and it kind of permeates throughout the car. So I end up grabbing that rag, and I've been wiping my computer and everything up, and it's smudgy. It's like smudge now.
It's smudge.
Yeah.
But it smells good.
It smells good, absolutely. You're right.
This
studio have never smelled this good.
It's never smelled this good. I feel like I got a brand new car.
So I'm going to wave this around so people that are looking at us on the YouTube chat, hey, I'm waving this towel around because this smells so good.
I was almost gonna ask you about it if you didn't bring it up. I was like, what is
that smell?
What is the smell? This is good. This is unusual.
Yeah, so we got a delightful smell.
It's a delightful smell. And
I'm going to take it out because it may get too strong after a while, so I'm going to put it outside. So let it, you know, disperse throughout the building.
Yeah, just let the waft come over us here. This
absolutely.
Is good.
Well, absolutely.
We are soaking up these last couple series, right, before we kind of go baseball only and soccer until training camp cranks back up late July. But, man, are we getting our money's worth for the NBA and NHL finals. We're going to talk about here in this first segment. The College World Series is also coming up this weekend in Omaha. Unfortunately, neither Tennessee nor Vanderbilt made it to Omaha. There are a couple of SEC teams. There are only two.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. What a bad year for the SEC. Only two out of the last eight are from the SEC. We'll talk to Mitch Light. He is in Omaha covering it for The Athletic today. We'll have our Ask D-Mace, and we're looking to have some fun here on this Friday. So we're looking forward to that. And we'll see what else we have up our sleeve. We're going to talk some Cam Ward today, get some different perspectives on what's going on as we continue to count down towards his rookie year. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. 615-737-1025 is our call or text line. That is our connection with all of you. And Michael in Madison has decided to be the first texter of the day saying it's a microfiber cloth.
Yes, microfiber. That's
a
what I was
microfiber
looking.
Cloth.
That's what
Who
I
knew?
Was looking for. I knew it, what it
Are
was.
Are there different
I
flavors couldn't... of the microfiber? Like different
well,
scents?
I mean.
Pina colada?
I mean.
Pine?
I am the one that sort of combined the microfiber with the scent. Micro scent. Scent, micro scent fiber or something. We gotta tie it all in together. But this does have a scent to it. But that's because
I feel like we're onto something here.
Yeah,
as long as you don't wipe your computer down with it.
Which I have already once.
Right, and that's the mistake. But we learn from our mistakes.
Exactly.
I feel like some sort of microfiber needs to be in a steady presence here in this studio.
Oh, absolutely.
Instead of the sort of the musty... kind of it's tight quarters here, you know.
We got
nothing wrong with our studio, but it's a little tight. You know, a lot of people moving around.
Exactly,
it can get a little messy.
A little warm
from time
and
to
messy,
time.
And you know, but that's why you bring in my
microfiber could be a breakthrough. Exactly. We might be on to something here.
With a scent to it.
Now, Adam is, he said he was on a, what did he say he was on? I want to get this right.
A splash pad?
A splash pad. Yeah, and I see Arlo. Are they at some water park? This is what I was going to ask, is are people into the water parks? I told you my story where I was excited to take my family to Wet n' Wild on our Orlando vacation a few years ago, and we had to throw the hammer down. We called the bluff.
Willie,
the kids called the bluff.
It.
We didn't go. I loved Wet n' Wild growing up. Willie, are you a water park guy?
Yes. No, I'm not. But let's stop. Let's stop for a second. It wasn't you. Don't say we in this. It was Aaron.
Yeah.
Aaron put the hammer down.
I didn't want to do it.
Yes.
Exactly. I was willing to.
Willie going to say, we put the hammer down. Willie, you didn't put the hammer down because you wanted to go.
I didn't want to go. Aaron was like, no, we're not going.
I was like, why did you do that? It was one of those, one more. You guys say one more thing. You yell at each other one more time. We're not going to the water park. And they did it. And she said, okay, that's it. We're not going. I was like, well, what are we going to do?
Look at each other.
What are we going to do?
Hey, she put her foot down, man. I bet you they ain't doing no more.
She's
after
like,
that.
God, no, hey, Aaron, let's do one more. How about one more, Aaron? And then we don't go.
Nah,
you know?
Nope.
It didn't work.
It didn't work.
But I did grow up, I enjoyed the water park. So are you a water park guy?
No, I'm not a big water. Not a kids. They enjoy stuff like that, but I wasn't a big water park guy. I mean, I had, you know, because the kids were little, I had to kind of participate as a dad, and I enjoyed the moment. But no, I'm not a water park guy.
I
hate having a brain like
Wild
two or three
was
sets
our
of
thing
clothes.
In Orlando. I really ended up enjoying it. They had a good variety of different rides, and my buddies and I, teenagers, you know. 13, 14, that's kind of the prime age of the water park, I think, where you're trying to do different things.
Yeah.
The wave pool and then the little rapid ride where you're trying to bounce in, the game would be to see how long you could stay on the ride before the guy comes in and just like throws your inner tube down to the next thing so you don't stay on there. There's just a lot of mini games within. We had a great time doing that. I see an action shot of Arlo at some sort of water park here that he's at. You know, shooting water on himself. He's, you know, enjoying the stuff here.
Exactly.
It just got me thinking about that. All right, 615-737-1025. We have a couple other texts. Weston Herman says, a seasoned fiber.
A seasoned
fiber.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that. Thank you, Wes.
Then Greg has said that we should, maybe this is like a marketing thing.
Yeah.
The game locker room scent for the studio.
I like that.
The game locker room scent for our studio.
I like
nice
that
one, Greg. Okay.
Yes, I like that one. I appreciate that one, Greg.
But speaking of games.
Yes.
What an epic last night.
Oh, my goodness.
In Florida. Man, that was as good a game on the big stage as you will find. And the other games were good. Game 3 was kind of a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of what made Game 4 so special is Edmonton was on. You talk about a team on the ropes. At one point, they had been outscored 10-1 over about the last four periods.
Mm-hmm.
They got smoked in game. Of course, they lost game two in overtime, double overtime.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave up that goal. Then they get whipped in game three, come out last night, get down 3-0, which could have been 4 or 5-0.
Yes.
It was a total domination by Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, did you think they had any chance? I was like, Edmonton's done. This is going to be a 5-game. It's over.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be a blowout. You know, but as like we talked about yesterday with Elliott, Skinner got pulled very quickly. They got him out of there. After he gave up that third goal, he gave two to Tkachuk right away. I think they scored like two goals in 41 seconds.
Yeah.
You just thought, like, man, it's about to be a landslide now. They changed goalies. They regrouped. And Edmonton just started. I don't think Florida, like, typically when you see a team get up, it seems like they put it in cruise control. I don't think Florida ever truly put it in cruise control. I just think Edmonton upped their game. And then a couple of crucial mistakes by Florida, turnovers and not paying attention when you're subbing out. I think it was just a few relapses or not attention to detail that got Florida in a position they were in, you know, toward the end of the game where Edmonton had come back and scored, you know, three unanswered goals. It was three unanswered goals and took the lead going into the last, 6 minutes of the third period?
That was incredible. When they took the lead, Edmonton, I really thought, are they going to just steal this one? Mm-hmm. But, of course, that wasn't the last chapter.
Exactly. It definitely wasn't the last chapter. They ended up pulling a guy. Ended up pulling
Bob.
Bob. And had a 6-on-5. And for a second there, I thought Edmonton was going to get – they were close on a few empty netters. But that just set up the stage for an epic, you know, come and tying the game 4-4 and sending it to overtime. They tied it with what, like 40-something seconds left on the
clock? Yeah, it wasn't a buzzer beater, but, yeah, it was in the final minute. They were able to get it to overtime, and then the overtime was just spectacular. Spectacular. Back and forth. Mm-hmm. The one shot that you thought, okay, this is it, it's over, that Pickard got just enough of it to tip it,
goodness.
And it hits the crossbar and comes out. There was the other player where the puck almost got just kicked in. It hit the post.
And then
Forsling on the second little bounce in tight gets his skate to keep the puck out. There was just all these,
that one where he kicked the puck out, the fans started going crazy.
Yeah,
they were like, go! And ended up not being a goal. It was inches away. But that was, that's the type of game I think you want to see. And then ultimately, the last goal that was scored by, who scored that?
It was Leon Draisaitl.
Yeah,
his fourth overtime game winner of this playoffs. Fourth.
But did you see how it went in?
Yes.
It hit a Florida skate.
Yep.
Because Bob was there. It hits the Florida skate. It ends up going in the crease. And they end up winning the game.
Yep. It was a... I'm not sure if he was even trying to shoot it. He had one hand on his stick. He may have been trying to pass it to Corey Perry. That seemed to be how Bobrovsky was reading it.
Mm-hmm.
He slid across, and as he was sliding, you know, when you slide, your five hole opens up, you know, the middle between your skates, and that's right where the puck went.
Exactly.
So as he was coming over, because Perry was coming on the other side, and thank God that Perry didn't score. I didn't want him to get the satisfaction of that. He's still one of the all-time villains. But Draisaitl, we get it. Although Draisaitl is just – he's the nightmare for the Predators, right? He scores at least two goals, three goals every game.
Yeah, they can't stop him.
He plays them. Hopefully that will change in time. But we got a 2-2 series, and the entertainment value is at top, top level because that was a gutsy, gutsy performance by the Oilers. They were playing with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins injured but trying to – Tough it out. Arvidsson didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
We know Zach Hyman didn't play. Klingberg didn't play. They lost one of their defensemen early in, at the latter stages of the first period, so they were down there. So I just thought there was no way after that first period they would have enough to dig out of that hole, but they did. And now they go back to Edmonton for game five.
This will be interesting. I still got Florida to win the series.
I do too.
But now it seems that it may just go seven, which I know the hockey world loves. And the seventh game will be back in Edmonton or in Florida.
Well, game six is Edmonton. Game seven would be
Florida,
in Florida.
Back in Florida. So it will be, I'm sure that's what the
NHL. Wait a minute. What am I saying? Game five is Edmonton. Game six would be back in Florida. Game seven would be back in Edmonton.
There
you're right.
So I'm pretty
struggling on a Friday.
I'm pretty sure that's what the league is banking on, that they get a game seven with these two tremendous teams. Again, like I've said this whole series, you know, if you want to see just good competitive, you know, hockey or sport, period, then you need to watch this, the remainder of this series, because it just may go seven. You got basically two heavyweights, but they come at you a little bit different. And it seems like, I don't think Florida necessarily did, like, it was almost like Edmonton took the game. They upped their game and took the game as opposed of Florida really breaking down and giving them the game.
Yeah, it was just a great game.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another game. We got another fun series. Here we are on Friday the 13th. We had some fun yesterday with the Friday the 13th movies. Tonight will be game four. We have a great series. My math again. Game five. It's 2-2. Is it game
four? No, it's game four. Because Indiana is up 2-1.
Jeez, I got to get my stuff straight.
Hey, you got a lot going on, Willie.
Indiana up two games to one. Big opportunity here. If they can find a way to win at home tonight, OKC could be in big, big trouble. We all feel like OKC is the better team, the deeper, more talented team. But Indiana's in the lead in the series. We're going to talk about that game a little bit later. And here is Adam doing work on vacation. He did. So let's go ahead and share this with our audience now that you put the time in here. One more nugget on the Stanley Cup Final before we turn our attention to Omaha and some college sports questions with Mitch Light. The Oilers last night, the seventh team in Stanley Cup Final history to win a game in which they trailed by three or more goals. Mm. But it's only the second team to ever do it on the road. The other team that did it was the Montreal Canadiens in 1919.
Well, two Canadian
remember
teams.
Remember that game in 1919 where they were down like by yesterday. 3 goals?
I remember it like it was yesterday.
I'm not sure we have film of the game of 1919.
Probably not.
Pictures, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
They're still talking about it in Montreal. Remember that 1919 comeback?
Oh, my goodness,
So the Oilers, that's a rare feat. Down by three on the road against a great team and came back and won. So the series is tied at two. All right, when we come back, DVD will get rolling. We'll go to Omaha. Check in with Mitch Light. We'll get the feel. Great sporting event, College World Series. They got some Cinderella stories out there, a couple of teams from the SEC. And we'll also just get the vibe on his take on college. Of course, Mitch joins us every week during football season, and we'll get his perspective on the settlement, you know, the clearinghouse, all of these things, the 20.5, as we all try to wrap our arms around it and say, what does this all mean? We'll get his perspective on that as well. Stay tuned. We're cranking it up here on DVD 102.5 The Game. Ah, yes, we're settling in to the fun days of summer when baseball takes center stage as we move down the stretch of our NBA and Stanley Cup Finals, and the College World Series is going on over in Omaha, and Mitch Light, who has been doing his weekly column on college baseball throughout the season, is covering the first portion of it over in Omaha, and so he joins us here on the show on the Friday the 13th, the eve of the tournament. Mitch, what's going on?
Not much, really. I did not even realize it was Friday the 13th until you said that. So far, nothing bad's happened here.
Okay, good. Nothing's bad's happened, and we did talk about yesterday when we realized that Game 4 of the NBA Final would also be on Friday the 13th. We started talking about the movies. You're about the same age as us. You and I are almost exactly the same age. D-May is a couple years younger. And of course, the older you get, if you're close, even if it's like when you're young, if you're 2 or 3 years older than somebody, you're like, well, man, I'm way older than that guy. Now we're all like, hey, we're same age. So how many of the Friday the 13th movies have you seen?
Very few. I am a wimp.
I do not
like horror movies. I don't like to be scared. I don't like the sudden movement, like the jumping out of the water and grabbing someone in the boat and like cutting their head off.
But you know it's coming, Mitch.
Not my thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. I just when I'm 7 years old, that wasn't really something I was interested in. So I am a wimp. Don't like scary movies. Don't like stuff like that. So. Yeah, that's my contribution to the conversation. Sorry.
Okay. Well, sorry to put you in that that frame of mind.
Yeah, I'm having
flashbacks.
I'm having a nightmare tonight in my hotel.
All right. Well, let's talk baseball then.
Okay, perfect.
What's the mindset with, quote, only two teams from the SEC getting to Omaha, and they're both in the same bracket? So you can't have an all-SEC final. I guess the odds would be lower that one of them wins the whole thing. Got two great teams, though. One of them absolutely could win it. But how would you evaluate the league's performance? Are they a little disappointed they didn't get more?
Clearly. You know, I think when you've got the number of national seeds and over to all top 16 seeds that were from the SEC, you'd expect to get more. And it's just, you can say it's a disappointment. It's okay. Doesn't mean the SEC wasn't great this year. It's not the best league. It is, and it was. It's just that, you know, baseball is a high variance sport, and SEC teams did not play well, and there's nothing wrong with saying that, and they did not. I'd say the vibe here is good. Like, I think people in college baseball circles and people in Omaha really appreciate the diversity, the geographic diversity, the conference diversity of the field. Having a Murray State here, having Coastal Carolina, though not really a Cinderella by any stretch, it's not a, you know, a power conference team. So the fact that there's no repeat teams from last year, like the town embraces the College World Series, as you know, it's a great event every year. But I think when you have the same teams year after year, you know, stale's not the right word. So I guess just my point is, there's a great vibe here with just the players so excited to be here, and the fan base is really excited to be here as well.
They always do it right in Omaha, regardless of who gets there. A couple of interesting stories to me. So let's start with the obvious one, the Cinderella of Murray State. Not far from our listening area, we always have some Murray State people. There's all those days they spend in the OVC.
Yeah.
So how did they get? How did they pull this off? How is their roster constructed? Because we know when you have all this roster movement, if you can hit it right, you can have a really good team. And obviously that happened for Murray State.
Yeah, you got to start with a head coach, Dan Skirka, who's got a really interesting story. He was hired 5 years ago. He was an assistant at Walter State Community College. Like, that's a great junior college program over in Morristown, Tennessee. They produce a lot of great players. But, like, we got a story coming. My colleague Mitch Sherman, who lives in Omaha, is doing a story on him. Like, what made Murray State hire a junior college assistant 5 years ago who was, like, 35 years old? And he's done a great job with the roster. It's a lot of transfers, as you'd suspect, a lot of bounce backs. You know, they've got some star power. Jonathan Hogarth, one of the outfielders, got 22 home runs. He was red hot in the regional, and they've got just enough pitching. And, I mean, you know how baseball is. It's just you get hot, you ride some arms. You don't need a ton of arms in the postseason because guys can pitch a lot, especially now when you get to Omaha, it's spread out. But it's just the access here from the media is great. So yesterday, each team takes batting practice, and then there's like a 15, 20-minute media availability where literally you can just go up to anyone in the dugout, grab people. And there was a Murray State guy, I don't know his name, but he was being interviewed on camera, and he just looks around. He goes, I can't believe this is my life. I can't believe I'm in Omaha. And, like, you know, every team in the country, they have their preseason goals, Omaha. I get it. But, like, realistically, when guys start the season at Murray State, do they expect to end the season in Omaha? Surely they don't. So it's just a great story here, and they're just so excited to be here.
When the big breakup of the Pac-12 was happening, I can remember D-Mace and I were on the air when the story hit that UCLA and USC were going to go to the Big Ten, and that really got the whole chain rolling, if I remember correctly. But I was thinking, baseball, UCLA and USC going from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten, how are they going to make that work? Because we know Big Ten baseball, because of the weather challenges, has always had trouble. They've had to really work hard to have good teams. But here we are with that whole breakup, UCLA, Arizona, and Oregon State. Oregon State, of course, a really unique situation. They all made it. So their baseball programs rose above the challenges.
Yeah, you know, Arizona, let's start with Arizona. I think that's a good fit to the Big 12. Geographically, you know, they're with Arizona State. I think they will be fine long term. UCLA, the ones going to the Big 10 were the ones you kind of worried about the most. And I think they'll be fine. They're still good baseball programs. But I would say, you know, in the short term, we can't overreact one way or the other. Just because three former Pac-12 schools made it doesn't mean, oh, all's great. These programs are going to thrive for the next 10 years. It's just you can't overreact like that. But UCLA is just such a name brand, such a strong recruiting base. I think they'll be fine. You mentioned Oregon State as the interesting story. For those who don't know, they decided rather than to follow Washington State into a Mountain West schedule this year, they're Division I independent. And there really have not been many Division I independents in baseball. You got to go back to Miami being the last successful one before they joined the ACC. They played a schedule, a lot of road games, a lot of neutral site games. They played an RPI-friendly schedule. But they're a very, very good team. They've got some serious star power. If you're not familiar with it, you know, Ava Arquette, a transfer from Washington. Their shortstop could be a top five pick. Gavin Turley's a great outfielder. So that's a great name brand. You know, they've won three national championships in the last 20 years. So they are going to rejoin the old Pac-12. The league won't be as good baseball-wise, but there will still be some good baseball schools, and I expect Oregon State to keep thriving as a program.
No, Mitch, the ruling came down on Zakai Ziegler, and he will not be granted that fifth year. Do you think this is over with, or do you think that there will be someone else down the line that challenges this? Because obviously, if Zakai Ziegler had won his case, then that may have been an avenue to for other student athletes to try to challenge for their fifth year. But do you think this is a done deal now?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I did not read, you know, I've been here, I did not read all the particulars of the case other than that it was denied. I'm sure people will try to figure out other avenues for legal, you know, tactics, but that one seems pretty cut and dry from the, I played 4 years in college, I'm seeking another year of eligibility, and it was denied. So I think there'd have to be extenuating circumstances and all that, and, you know, it appears right now that the floodgates were not opened in that case, because if he were granted another year, then there's really, there's no other circumstances. Like, if you played 4 years and you want to keep playing, if Zakai right. Ziegler could do it, then I can do it. Anybody can do it. So that was the big one. Like, I've said this many times. I think it's great for Vanderbilt. I think it's going to be fun this year that Diego Pavia was granted another year of eligibility. Do I think it's great for college sports? No, I don't. I'm a big fan of the four and done or five and done. If they want to go 5 years of eligibility, which they talk about, that's fine, I guess, and then end it, no extenuating circumstances. Or if they want to keep it 4 years, you can play four in a five-year span. But I don't think it's in the good of the sport to allow players to keep playing. You're taking away spots from rising, you know, freshmen and all that stuff. So a big can of worms right there.
Now, can you see this possibly happening? Because, and Willie and I discussed this, unless there's a hardship or an injury, you know, that redshirt year is gone and you're more than likely not going to get it back on the back end, meaning after your fourth year.
Yeah.
But can you see coaches now with the way it's going with NIL and everything else that they can start convincing these athletes to redshirt all while you're getting paid and develop? So if you want to get your money at the back end, which is, it seems it's been proven that is the year where you can garner the most money as your fifth year. Can you see coaches convincing student athletes to say, hey, listen, redshirt this year, you're still going to get paid, and it gives you that fifth year if you want to use it?
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't really thought of it in that terms. I'd play devil's advocate mm-hmm. that I would do it the other way. Like a coach doesn't want to think about 5 years down the line. A, am I going to be at that school? Is that kid still going to be at that school? They don't want to develop a kid for someone else. Now, if you're at the top of the food chain, you know, if we're talking football and you're at Georgia and Alabama, that's a one thing. But if you're Vanderbilt or, you know, you're Purdue, whatever like that, do you want to develop a kid for him to move on and earn the riches in his fifth season? If he's really that good, will he still be around? So people will continue to get creative in all of this. But that's a situation that I think would really be a case by case.
Yeah, it could be. And I see the only reason that the only way that possibly can happen, and it may happen, you know, down the line, is that you get collective bargaining where you can potentially, in that collective bargaining, lock student athletes up at least
yeah,
2 years to a
yeah.
contract. And then that's probably the only way you can kind of circumvent it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I think we're all in favor of that, to see kids moving. Like, interesting, I don't know if you guys have been following, I can't remember the guy's name, but Vanderbilt just got a basketball transfer from Eastern Kentucky who tore his knee. He's redshirting this year. He's got a rehab. Like, there's nothing preventing this kid to coming from Vanderbilt this year, rehabbing at Vanderbilt, and then maybe getting a more lucrative NIL deal. I'm sure that's not his plan. I'm sure there's agreement with Vanderbilt and all this stuff, but that's just one hypothetical. Like, mm-hmm.
That's a great question. Is did they have that agreement on the front end?
Yeah.
Well, there's no contract.
Yeah.
So really, you know, there's other. So
could
sure
you have a contract? Could you have a gentleman's agreement or something like that? Or, no, nothing
sure
in writing, I guess.
Yeah, nothing in writing. So I'm sure, and I you know, I got the kids quote unquote using Vanderbilt and all this stuff, but it just, that's the first thing I thought. I was like, this kid is going to be here for a year in rehab and use, you know, every school has great medical, but, you know, Vanderbilt, obviously, good medical staff. And, you know, you'd hope to think he's playing at Vanderbilt next season, a year from now, but there's no guarantee under the current landscape.
Mitch Light is with us, and he is hanging out in Omaha. He's covering the College World Series for The Athletic. He covers, among other things, college baseball and college football, and we're just dabbling in college sports. One more on the big picture before we circle and end up back in Omaha. I want to focus on Arkansas and LSU before we let you go, Mitch. But now that we've had a few days to sort of have this sink in, any thoughts? Because everybody on the – as soon as the story hits and that clearinghouse story goes down, here's what's going to happen. You know, Paul Feinbaum came out and said, that's it. The NCAA, it's over. They're just tournament directors, et cetera. What do you have any kind of vision? Is it being overblown? What's your thought on what all this means?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And I guess my thought would be I believe the schools, and Dan Wolk and I column on this, which I haven't read yet, but basically saying that the schools claim that they want to be governed. They want rules. And I believe them. It's easy to say that. Everyone wants rules. We just want to know the rules. What do you hear, coach? We just want to know the rules, and we'll abide by them. But then when push comes to shove, everyone is thinking in their best interest. So I'm optimistic that when you hear that schools want to know what the rules are, they want to be governed. But then I'm pessimistic because I've been following college sports for 30 years, that when push comes to shove, everyone acts in their best own interest. And they want to push the envelope, and they want to figure out how to get that guy in, how to get that guy eligible, how can we pay more money than that other school.
Right.
So probably didn't really answer your question, but we're in just such a wait-and-see mode that so much has changed, so much continues to change. And that's been a theme here, people asking coaches. You know, in baseball is such a weird spot. It's different on the food chain at every school, how much money they're going to get. You're talking to Murray State, that they haven't even come close to funding 11.7 scholarships, and now their competition here in Omaha some of these teams are going to be up at 34. So it's like they take a small step forward, and their competition's taking five steps forward.
That is a great thought. So we circle that back. I also kind of had this thought as you said that we want our rules. Let's establish what the rule is, so then we can secretly break the rules and gain our school an advantage by breaking
rules.
So, Mitch, Arkansas and LSU, two heavyweights. You and I saw Arkansas front and center live here.
Yep.
An impressive weekend they had against Vanderbilt early in the season. They have always looked the part to me. I haven't watched LSU as much. Who do you give the edge to between those two teams?
They're both very good. Obviously, Arkansas, to me, I've said the most complete roster all season, which is strange because they lost three out of four series at one stretch. Like, we probably saw them at their best. You know, what do they do well? They've got good starting pitching. They got a deep bullpen. Their lineup is very deep. Oh, and they're one of the best defensive teams in the country. So, like, what are they missing? Nothing, really. LSU, I would say, offensively isn't where Arkansas is. Their lineup isn't as deep. They need guys like Jared Jones and Steven Milam to stretch that lineup a little bit more. So I would say, you know, their pitching has come along. The thing that they might have the best 1-2 in the country, at least the best 1-2, with Cade Anderson and Anthony Ianson. So I'll tell you, I mentioned earlier how everyone loves the diversity of the field and all this stuff, but the buzz is going to be tremendous Saturday night when you got Arkansas and LSU, those two huge fan bases. The storyline here is Dave Van Horn, who's had a great career, has not won a national championship yet. We know how close they came in 2008.
Yeah.
Catch a foul ball. They win the national championship. So that's kind of the storyline here is, can they deliver that for Dave Van Horn?
And the other thing that's, and you're going to be, you could participate in this, Mitch, if you want. What is it, the Jell-O shots? Who wins the Jell-O shot? LSU is like the all-time, right? I feel like Arkansas might be able to compete with that.
Yeah, I had some practice this week, too, because my wife had been sick, and she made Jell-O, little Jell-O thing. So in the fridge, I was like, what are you, trying to get me prepared? Get me in game shape for Omaha? I will not be partaking, although there has been a lot of local buzz that people jumping on the Murray State bandwagon to help Murray State because their fan base not be as big. So it's sort of like, you know, there might be some fans of other schools putting on a Murray State hat and doing a Jell-O shot.
You could be one of those guys, Mitch.
Yeah, I could be, but I won't.
can you get a Jell-O shot and just not have the alcohol in there?
Shot. Just have the Jell-O.
Order Jell-O, please.
I think the important part is if you pay for it, they don't care what you do with it or what you consume. It's the best marketing tactic of all time.
It is. It is really well done by them. So, Mitch, we'll let you enjoy the tournament. Thanks a lot for coming on with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Take care, guys.
Yep. All right. Mitch Light from The Athletic in Omaha. Remember, Caroline Fenton was all about the Jello shots and her pride and her school, LSU,
yes,
the champion. I think they shattered the record the last time they were out there. We'll see. What
I think it was 69,000 or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, they obliterated the record. I mean, goodness. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm trying to figure this out.
Strength in numbers, I guess.
But so is LSU just a bunch of drunkards?
Yes. Yeah. Drunk Cajuns, as they like to call themselves.
Okay. Well, that's just about every college, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
You just don't have the Cajun part, you know?
Yeah, you know, there we go.
But you talk about two great fan bases, Arkansas and LSU, among the top five for sure in, you know, their consistent filling of their own stadiums and traveling. That is going to be a spectacle when they go head-to-head, which I'm sure they will. All right, when we come back, we'll crank it up for our next segment. Don't forget, Ask D-Mace is coming out. We could, you know, somebody could ask D-Mace about Jell-O shots.
Yes.
Does he like Jell-O shots?
Absolutely.
615-737-1025 is our call and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Stay tuned. We're coming back. DVD continuing on this Friday. We had a little baseball talk there with Mitch Light. And don't forget, speaking of baseball, tune into 94.9 The Fan today as the Sounds take on Norfolk. They always put today. It's really this evening. Pre-game begins at 5:20, and the first pitch is at 5:35. Sounds against Norfolk. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Tune into that'll be all for now. We'll have more promos on what's going on in Roman. I almost spliced two into one. I've had a couple of blips on my Friday radar here. But D-Mace, we had a comment, Mitch Light saying he, here on this Friday the 13th, has no interest in watching scary movies at all. Not into the Friday the 13th franchise. We're going to have Ask D-Mace at 12:30. That might come back up.
Yeah.
Wes and Hermitage on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I've never agreed more with Mitch. I guess he has a lot of disagreements with Mitch. When Mitch comes on, he comes on a lot.
I did not know that.
Me either.
But on this one, he agrees. I do not like scary movies, he says. LOLO.
Come on. I mean, Friday the 13th.
He says, why pay for something to scare you?
That's the whole thrill in it. Paying for it to scare you. I don't want to get scared and not pay for it. I mean,
I like the psychological thrillers a little bit more than the slashers. I went through my period growing up. I can go for the comedic slasher, but you know, the early Friday the 13th, those are serious. Those are spooky, for
but
sure.
But now you look back on it, Willie, it's like, it's so
funny.
Predictable,
it's kind of
funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I can watch it now.
Don't go in there. Don't go in there.
But
he's
you're
there.
Going in there. He's you coming. Know he's right there. Yeah. And you always wonder, like, how fast is Jason truly? Because no matter how fast you run, how far you drive, Jason ends up right where you are the minute you get there. Don't matter. And Jason can't drive.
It's got to be like a 4.19.
No, it's like a 2.4
yeah,
somewhere
honestly.
Around there. Yeah. He has to run he hasn't been clocked.
Yeah, because he's not supposed to have like supernatural like teleport.
No, he doesn't. So he is the fastest human ever.
He's got speed.
Yeah, he has speed. Beyond speed.
Speed demon.
Because we know he can't drive. Now, Michael Myers, he can drive because one of his episodes, he did drive. But Jason can't drive. So, there you go. I just always wonder.
Jason Voorhees is a phenomenon for sure.
Yes.
And just the name Voorhees, it just gives you the heebie-jeebies right there. Like, Voorhees.
Don't mess with him.
Voorhees. Worms, crawling out of his mask and stuff. Oh, man. Scary.
Do you think there's actually a Voorhees in the world?
Well, there is a town called Voorhees,
okay.
New Jersey, which is really close to Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
And that's where a lot of the...
Willie, how do you know this?
I know this because Terry Crisp,
okay,
who
no
played
wonder.
For the Broad Street Bullies, he lived close to Voorhees. I don't think he lived in Voorhees, uh-huh. But his daughter Kaylee was born in Voorhees, New Jersey.
Oh, man.
So, you know, she would come on the show with us a long time ago with the Predators, and we had some fun times with her. and she would always have this Canadian pride thing for the Olympics and stuff. And we would remind her, you know, you were born in the USA.
In Voorhees.
Voorhees, New Jersey.
Of all places.
Yes. I think the Flyers had a practice facility there. They may still, at one time they did. I don't know if they still do or not, but that's the only reason I knew that.
Okay.
But yes, here's a question, just to wrap up the hour here. We were talking to Mitch Light, and the Ziegler thing has been shot down for now. And I think the key word is for now, because I do think that there will still be momentum someday for college kids to play for 5 years, right?
I'm sure there will be.
But the model has been you get 4 years to play for like 100 years. So do we think philosophically, this really just comes down to, I know there's lawmakers and lawyers that are going to argue this or that, but do we think that you should be able to play five seasons of college now that we've opened this can of worms with the COVID thing? Because technically they're not changing the rule. They basically had a year or 2 years that didn't count.
Exactly.
So you're still, so you played a year, but it's not supposed to count. Although now if you set these records because you played all these extra games and you hit extra three pointers or you got extra base hits, you still are the record holder, even though you played another 25 or 35 more games than your competition.
Of course.
Philosophically, though, do you think you should get 5 years of college playing? I don't think so.
See, to me, I'm torn because the 5 year, it's always been there, but it's been 5 years, but you got to get 4 and 5. So the 5 has always been there. And, you know, when we were growing up, that fifth year was almost given to you because you were going to be redshirted. So it was almost like it was a known thing that, okay, more than likely, unless you're just that guy or girl, more than likely you're going to spend 5 years here because we're going to redshirt you your first year.
A lot of really good football programs, unless you were a stud, they almost planned on. It was not understood, but it was a little more routine to say, we're going to redshirt your freshman. You're going to put some weight on you. You're going to come in, and then you're sliding in behind. The best football programs did it that way.
Yeah. They
maybe different in different sports, but football for sure.
Yeah, well, you could stay for that fifth year. No one really made a big deal about it because it wasn't like that was a talking point. But now that, individuals are able to get paid, I think, Willie, you got to open it up for discussion, because we know there's only 1% of all these student athletes. And if you combine all the sports together, it's probably less than, it's probably like 0.00000, whatever, if you just combine them all together. These kids are going to start understanding, like, I'm not going to the pros. I'm not going to have this illustrious career. My window for making money is now, and I can garner the most money that fifth year. So you may just start seeing kids, and I know kids want to play right away. I get that. But you may just start seeing kids knowing that, okay, let's just sit down and have this real conversation, because now agents are involved and everything else, and it's money. Is it better for you to skip that fifth year, try to make a team, and you don't get no money? You may get a $5,000, maybe a $50,000 signing bonus or a $100,000 signing bonus if you're a undrafted free agent. That's maybe. Or you can stay a fifth year, and you can make $1 million, $3 million for that last year. I think kids, if they really sat down, and if these agents aren't greedy, they would say, your best option is to try to get a fifth year or find a way to redshirt that first year, so you at least you have the option, if you want it, to have that fifth year. Because once you get outside that freshman year, if you don't get hurt, you ain't getting no redshirt year. It's over with.
Yeah. I am curious to see in the next few years.
That's what I would be saying to my son and daughter. Like, maybe if they're going to pay you anyway, for that first year, and they understand that, hey, listen, he may not get as much playing time. Then if I'm looking at it as a parent, I'm going in, I'm looking at the coach. Well, you can play, because I'm talking football now, you can play X amount of games, but I think, what is it, once you get in a conference play or something like that, your red shirt year is gone. Yeah, is it still like that?
I still think they have parameters.
Okay.
I still think that that's true, where you could qualify for a red shirt. You don't hear it as much now with the
NIL. Yeah, so I would use that if there's
the
like a –
Well, where is he from? From UNLV, he played four games, and then he redshirted.
Right.
So it's
right. Because he knew it was going to cut off.
Exactly. So my thing is, these freshmen, let them play 4 years. I mean, four games. If you know, okay, this guy, then you keep him there. But if not, discuss with whoever. Hey, listen, we got a redshirt, and you got to continue to pay him. But just think about, you know, him getting that extra year if he needs it. Now, Mitchell's right. What if that kid says, you know what, I'm transferring after this season? Now, as a head coach, you're like, man, I didn't did this.
You've laid the groundwork only to have him leave and do something
and transfer
else
somewhere
else.
Which would still work out for the student-athlete because that year would be a red shirt year.
Curious to see where it goes, without a doubt. When we come back, we'll start our noon hour. We'll talk a little bit of Titans. We'll have Ask D-Mace at the bottom of the hour. And we do have a lot of takes on the Friday the 13th theme that we have going on. By the way, happy Friday the 13th. Let's just have some good vibes.
Is that like a happy? Let's turn it into happy 13th.
Is it happy if you get scared a little bit?
Yeah. Like, I think it's supposed
to. Is it associated with bad luck, like traditionally,
yes,
the Friday
the
13th?
Yeah.
Like, let's have good luck on Friday the 13th? Good, bad luck? I don't know. We'll have to vet this a
little
bit.
We have to change the tone.
Yeah.
Change the tone. We want to come out of this okay, one way or the other.
Yeah, but it is the 13th.
It is the 13th, and it is Friday.
Yeah, you got it right.
All right, DVD is coming your way on this Friday the 13th. Hour number two is next.